Welcome to Podcast One. We hope you'll support our sponsors who bring you these podcasts absolutely free and with limited interruptions. And of course, we appreciate you listening to this show, which will get started in just a second. The following program is a PodcastOne.com presentation.
The expectation is bad news every day.
I went home and I just felt hollowed out.
It couldn't be any worse. We've had two of the six worst shootings, mass shootings in the nation in the last month.
Externally, I haven't really done anything about it or said anything to anyone about it, which kind of makes me feel guilty.
After hearing about the church shooting in Texas, if you didn't have as significant of an emotional reaction as you feel like you should have, you are not alone.
I am 100% numb to it, which is awful.
If you didn't or haven't really even talked about it with anyone, you are also not alone.
I live with my partner, and she has specifically requested to not talk about it.
This is Backseat Rider, the podcast where I drive a Lyft car in Chicago, and whoever ends up in the backseat becomes the cast of this show. And this week, we are not going to be rehashing bad news. That's not the point of this episode. But what we are going to do is really hash out our reactions to it in some detail, okay? Beyond the 10-second sound bites you hear on the news or those really polarizing short little comments you see online. And my hope by doing this is by hearing in depth from some of our fellow citizens on this, instead of perpetuating those feelings of helplessness and how divided and how numb we all are at all the bad news coming in our direction these days, maybe you will hear a story or a point of view from one of this week's passengers that'll remind you that we are actually all in this together. And before we really dive in, for any new listeners that may have picked us up here in season two without listening much to season one of Backseat Rider, I want to clarify something about the interviews on this podcast. And this is really the essence of what I hope is different about this show. When it comes to political issues, most times on the news, we see people talking who are either experts or people who have a goal in mind or an agenda by choosing to appear on camera. And since my passengers are paired with me based on nothing more than GPS, they have no idea they're about to be in a possible interview situation, and they also have no idea what I'm going to ask them about. What you hear in this show is raw and unplanned.
Like, normal life should not involve mass shootings, like, especially not like two in a month's time.
And so in your mind, is it part of normal life now?
I mean, I guess it has to be. It has to be considered that if they're happening with this kind of frequency. Like,
this is a 30-year-old who grew up in the Chicago suburbs, and I drove him from downtown to his home office in Logan Square, where he works in a job promoting local artists. And like most of the conversations you're going to hear today, I talked to him in the days immediately following the mass shooting at the Texas church.
Say this is like the first time that I've spoken about it.
In this car?
In this car, yeah.
Now, have you thought about it much?
Yeah, plenty. Yeah, absolutely.
He hasn't talked about it with his domestic partner, who he says made it very clear the topic is off limits.
She doesn't want to talk about it. It's too much. I get it. She's from Texas, but she's not from that area of Texas or anything. So it's not anything to do with, like, location or religion or anything like that. It's just she is done talking about shootings and because they happen so much.
As for his own emotions, he describes them as a combination of numb and helpless.
Stuck. Like, to be stuck in this and to have nothing, there's nothing you can do, there's nothing I can do. Truly, really, truly.
He told me that reaction is the collective buildup of years worth of news consumption, and also that it's the same numb reaction he once had to something personal.
So, I grew up, my mother was an alcoholic, and I grew up not knowing how to help her while simultaneously only wanting to help her, while also simultaneously being angry at her for being essentially a, like semi-abusive absentee that, like, you know, framed a lot of things in an unfortunate way. And to feel helpless in that way, to feel helpless in being able to, like, to not be able to help your mother in the, in whatever pain she's feeling, and also the way that she's dealing with it, sucks.
And that feeling of helplessness lasted from when to when, would you say?
I was probably 10 when it really, when it struck me, and when it, like, started getting bad through 18, 19 years old. Yeah. She's what you would describe as a dry drunk, which is that she's stopped drinking because, I mean, she was in the hospital for months, she went into a coma, she was in jail, she did all of the things. She actually, like, can't drink. Her liver functions at a level where if you were to introduce alcohol to her system, like, she has to be careful about perfume. Yeah, like,
wow.
it, like, the alcohol in a perfume that absorbs into the skin can fuck her up. She's not drinking, but at the same time, she acts drunk. She acts drunk most of the time. It's almost her, like, her, that's her level. She had 3 DUIs in under a month.
When you were how old?
I was 14, 15, somewhere in there. Yeah, I was not driving yet. I was in the car for 2 of them. One of them was an accident, like a car crash. One of them was just pulled over for drunk driving. And then another one totally separate, like she was by herself. And it was jailable. She was in jail for a month or maybe 2 months. I don't remember. I was young. She was in jail for a while, and, like, it was due to drunk driving.
The drinking continued, and it continued to upset him until 4 years later.
There was a time between, like, 18 and 20 where I just couldn't care about it. Yeah. There, you know, you just hit a point. Yeah.
Hit a point where he checked out, which is the same as how he's now handling this steady barrage of negative news.
I've got to say, I am 100% numb to it, which is awful. It couldn't be any worse. We have had 2 of the 6 worst shootings, mass shootings, in the nation in the last month.
And I don't trust emotion when it comes to consuming news.
Here's a 51-year-old who is right now between jobs. And like my first passenger, he consumes news at an emotional arm's length.
Yeah, it's hard to become really sort of emotionally engaged at something that's so kind of far removed.
So. What? Has there been a current event or national story, could be a local story too, that really did get you feeling emotional in a visceral way?
Probably, you know, 9/11. That was the...
Was that the last time?
Yeah, I happened to be, on Wall Street on 9/11. So it was very visceral, you know, first walking to make it to the base of the Brooklyn Bridge, walking toward, you know, the Twin Towers, and then, you know, being... I literally just stepped from the base of the bridge onto, which is stable, to the suspended, the hanging part, which is kind of unstable, turned around and saw the first tower drop. And that was sort of, my parents were in Germany during World War II, and so all those kind of like, you know, life-changing, big, catastrophic kinds of events, you know, like kind of like World War II, were another generation. It was so far removed, and all of a sudden, there it was. So I think that was because, you know, I lived about a mile from Ground Zero in Manhattan. I knew some people who were in the Twin Towers who passed on. and they knew some people who survived. That you know, actually seeing the evidence in front of your face, that definitely moved me emotionally. So, but you know, probably the news of you know far off catastrophes doesn't really I guess move me that emotionally. So
that makes sense. Just because, I mean, to especially after witnessing something like that, you didn't just see it on TV.
No, and I would say that I didn't really understand what sort of PTSD was until after there. I probably for a good year and a half, maybe almost 2 years. I could not go within like 2 blocks of the Empire State Building. I really hated flying, and you know, when I was laying in my bed, you know, which was maybe you know sort of a block from the Hudson River, I would listen to all the traffic on the Hudson River, planes or helicopters. You know, just was very, you know, my my emotions and my sort of ability to deal with stress were not good for a long period of time there. So one night I was lying in bed, you know, my wife was asleep. You know, she had been up, you know, like Midtown, and you know, Midtown might as well have been like on the other side of the continent. You know, you didn't see it. And I, you know, my wife was asleep, and I just could not get to bed. I could not get to sleep, rather. And this went on for months. You know, I was probably, you know, I was usually operating on like, you know, 2-3 hours of sleep a night for probably a good part of a year.
Another indication that PTSD may have been in effect surfaced on a trip here to Chicago.
Yeah, I just remember coming to Chicago and, you know, had a meeting in the Sears Tower, the Willis Tower, and, you know, go there with one of my partners, and I couldn't go up. I could not go, I think it was like on the 40th, 45th floor or something like that. I was like, nope, sorry, you're going to have to do this one without me. Yeah.
Since 9/11, he says that it takes a lot for a news event to actually spark any kind of emotional reaction.
So I'm already well past the specifics of the latest mass shooting.
Instead, focusing more academically on solutions.
I'm already taking a short circuit to, like, what can one do about gun regulations? And apparently, you know, the NRA is just too powerful. And so I'm already there, like, what can we do? How can we basically hamstring the NRA? Because the NRA is what's standing in the way of, you know, the vast majority of Americans who want some sort of, you know, gun control.
I don't know. I feel like people have become pretty numb to it.
Here's a college grad who just moved to the north side of Chicago. She's working as a bartender. And I drove her home, again, just a couple of days after Texas happened.
Externally, I haven't really done anything about it or said anything to anyone about it, which kind of makes me feel guilty, I guess, because I feel like since it has struck some sort of chord within me, I should use that to take some sort of action, but I haven't done that, which makes me feel guilty.
Like our first passenger, she has spent time thinking about what happened at the church, but our car ride was actually the first conversation she's had about it, either in person or online.
My roommate is moving to Australia in March. And she posted something today on Facebook about how I think Australia had bought back all of the guns. And since they've done that, they've seen like a huge drop in homicides and suicide by firearm. And so when I read that, I was trying to think if that would be possible in our country, and I really don't think that it is, just because the NRA is so huge. Like, it's unreal how huge they are, and I do kind of feel a little bit helpless in that sense, because they are so big. I really don't think that there would ever be a time where we would be on the same page as Australia and buying back all the guns. I don't think that's possible.
Have there been any news stories or
issues where you're like, you care so much about it, where it does kind of spur you into action?
Yeah. So, a couple years ago, I was having a really hard time trying to figure out what I wanted my college major to be.
Okay.
Here,
I'll turn this off, by the way. Okay. So it's not, like, running while you tell the story.
The shooting of Mike Brown happened while I was trying to figure out what I wanted to study in college. And when that happened, it struck such a chord with me, and I was so upset because of everything that was going on with that whole case and just everything that had happened. And I decided that I wanted to help out in some sort of way. And so I decided to major in political science and then hopefully, like, once I would graduate, go on to law school.
Why do you think one hit you harder in a way? Was it because there was this single victim, it was very, more personal, as opposed to, just another mass shooting? Or was there any other factor, do you feel like, played in that gave you that really visceral reaction?
I think it was just the one person and the injustice that came from it. And I feel like that story became so... it got so popular, and I feel like with these mass shootings, and this just sounds so shitty, but it's like a lot of times people are like, oh, it's another mass shooting. Like it happens so often that we just become numb to it. And so I feel like with the Mike Brown thing, like, because I mean, that's not the first time that something like that has happened, but I think because the story got so big and there were so many injustices that were happening with that case, I feel like that's why I took it so personally.
Coming up, I drove a guy who also told me that the last major story that really struck a chord with him was Ferguson, Missouri, where a white police officer shot and killed Michael Brown, an unarmed black man. And my passenger's white, lives in a white neighborhood, and he told me that this Black Lives Matter sign that he and his wife recently put up in their yard just got stolen.
Like, obviously, somebody has made a statement to us. Are we going to just let sleeping dogs lie? Are we going to put another sign out and see what happens?
Do you want to be great at reading body language, developing persuasion and influence, as well as master rapport and social interaction? What if I told you that you would learn from top performers like NBA superstar Shaquille O'Neal, former CIA director Michael Hayden, and brilliant thinkers like Dirty Jobs' Mike Rowe? Take a minute right now and subscribe to the Art of Charm podcast with me, Jordan Harbinger, and you'll hear how I pull out the secret psychology, life experience, and wisdom that can only be learned from them. You'll hear Shaq talk about how to manage your career and how to know who to trust when everyone's out to get something from you. You'll discover how to think critically from Bill Nye and Neil deGrasse Tyson, and even how Tony Hawk's life as a skateboard icon will influence how you think about your career and relationships in a whole new way. This show is for you if you want to outcompete, outperform, and outthink everyone around you, and it's the only place you'll get practical, applicable strategies from every single episode. Since you're all about learning from the absolute best, download and subscribe for free right now and upgrade your brain 4 times a week at podcastone.com or in the Podcast One app.
So far, the passengers we have heard from had either a numb or a largely detached reaction to both Texas and Las Vegas. This next guy is different, though. He's 22, recently graduated from a liberal arts college in the Northeast, and he is now working as a video editor within the world of television news.
I work in news and journalism, so the people that I worked with immediately in my workspace, it was basically the only thing we were talking about because it was the only thing we were reporting on.
Okay.
But when it came to, like, my friends, I mean, as a result of the way that I was exposed to it, I felt like I was the one who was, like, starting the conversation a lot of the time. I didn't really feel that people were, like, really, like, making a really concerted effort to talk about it unless they, like, had a reason to.
Did you judge them for that, or was it one of those things where you understand, like, people are numb on this issue? What's your take on that aspect of it?
I mean, like, I personally was, like, really traumatized by the coverage just because of how close I was to it. I mean, like, just the way that I was reporting on it for my job, like, I was exposed to it for the entirety of, like 3 work days. And that was really taxing. So, I mean, personally, I didn't really understand, or I understand why people would distance themselves from it just because of how, like, horrific and traumatizing an event it was in the first place. But, like, on the other hand, like, these issues aren't really going away, and it's hard to see these other events, such as, like, the Texas church shooting take place and not feel like the conversation is, like, stagnating.
Upset with the events themselves and frustrated with a dialogue that he feels is going nowhere.
We've experienced the most brutal 10 years of gun violence that I think this country has ever seen. And if that's not an indicator that we have a problem, with either the lack of legislation or the combination of the lack of legislation and mental health issues or whatever spin you want to really take on it. It just seems like every time that this happens, the same conversations come up and that nothing happens until the next shooting. I remember the morning before I went into work on the Las Vegas shooting, and I have, like, the news app on my phone, and it sends me a notification. And when I woke up that morning, I wake up at 3:30 a.m. to get to work at 4. There was a notification on my phone that said something about a shooting in Las Vegas. And I swiped on it so that it would disappear, and I hit the little X, and I went to work, not really realizing what the scope of this event was. And then the first thing that I do in the morning is I get ready. I'm a video editor. I get ready to watch the show to see what we're going to put online. And everything that we ran from the show from the first minute to the last was coverage of the Las Vegas shooting. And that morning, I had the luxury of being able to swipe away from that notification and say that I wasn't going to look at it. Because to me, it was another mass shooting, and it was upsetting enough to know that something like that had happened. But what's different, I guess, about my situation is that whether or not I get rid of that news story on my phone, I don't get to just leave that when I get to work. It's part of my work.
Got it.
And I guess where my situation was different than others is that a lot of people have that luxury where they can just choose not to open that news story or to delete it off of their phone and not look at it. Whereas because of the nature of my work, I am exposed to it in a really concentrated way. After looking at dozens of videos of people who had been at the shooting, who were being shot at by this person they couldn't see, and editing together a video for that day, which is just something that I have to do every day, but it was particularly difficult for that one because of the subject matter. I went home and I just felt hollowed out. Like, it was such an emotionally exhausting experience to have to see that much trauma on such a wide scale, that I had a really difficult time processing it, and I just felt traumatized. Like, I called my parents, I called my siblings who live out of state, I called my ex-girlfriend, I called my best friend who's getting his master's degree in Providence, and I talked to all of them about what had happened that day, because I personally couldn't understand the scope of not just like the violence itself, but the way that I'd been exposed to it in such a concentrated way. My dad doesn't work in media, but you know, he's wise when it comes to workplace stuff. He asked me, after talking his ear off about how upset I was about what I'd experienced at my work and about this event that had taken place and just the way that we'd covered it, he asked me if I was thinking about leaving the company that I worked for. And it had never crossed my mind, even for a second, to think about leaving this new job because I like it. But at that point, like, I realized that this was a part of what I was going to have to do, whether I liked it or not. And, like, if there was another event like this that took place that was this traumatizing, like, I was going to be exposed to it in a similar way. And, like, that's just a part of what I have to do.
I think we've already reached that point where it's kind of like fade into background noise.
Here's a 38-year-old finance worker that I drove from his office in River North to his home in Boys Town.
Yeah, I used to read, listen to everything, and lately it's, I can barely get through one article without, you know, just kind of dismissing whatever it is I'm reading.
He describes himself as a cynic and a skeptic when it comes to just about any news story these days.
Yeah, I feel like we're just barraged so much with, at least I am personally, you know, constantly reading news stories, constantly reading things that feel like propaganda with a political bent, that this just kind of, I think it makes you cynical, right?
The antidote for him.
So I look for fluff.
He told me what happened at Sandy Hook Elementary in Newtown, Connecticut. That was a breaking point. Said that was the last time that he let himself really get emotionally invested in a major news event.
I felt it when Newtown happened. That was very, I think that was probably the most emotionally engaging for me, even more than September 11th, just because it seemed to strip away a lot of, for me, at that moment, it stripped away a lot of skepticism for me. But, you know, again, over time, the calluses grow back and you kind of become a bit desensitized to it, I think. But yeah, I just want to stop hearing about it. I feel like if Sandy Hook wasn't enough to kind of snap us out of this trend that we're on, I'm not sure anything will be, right?
The last passenger I want to introduce you to this week is 31, and he manages a hotel. Picked him up from a barbershop in Lakeview after he got a haircut, and we were headed to his neighborhood further up on the northwest side. And again, this conversation happened 3 days after Texas.
Well, I work at a hotel, so we have the news on 24/7 every day. And we have people coming in and out that are from all sorts of places. So I kind of get everybody's take on it throughout the day. So I start in the day, somebody, you know, the news will flash, and somebody will say, oh, isn't that crazy? And somebody will be like, well, it's the gun laws and this and that. And I get kind of everything. And for me, I would say that I am kind of numb at this point. The expectation is bad news every day. There's helplessness because there's no clear path to solution of any kind. And it doesn't seem like there's any leadership it even bringing us together on it. You know, and that's, you'd think that it, at the very least, we could all, like, come together as a country or a community to be like, bad things happen and they suck and we all should, you know, be nicer to each other today because of that. And there's nobody doing that. We're in a very divisive country right now. And so, yes, it does feel helpless, but because there's nobody bringing people together.
Like my other riders, I asked him what the last news story was that struck enough of a chord to get him, quote-unquote, off the sidelines.
So I work at a hotel that's in a predominantly black community. And many of my coworkers are also black. And, you know, when this stuff hits the TV, they're immediately, like, we're all affected by it. But, like, there's a complete shift in their disposition for the day. And so it affects me a great deal. And I was talking to one of my coworkers, and his name's John. And we were talking, and he was saying that he likes... I'm not being terribly succinct, but he was saying that he really appreciates people putting Black Lives Matter signs on their front lawn because it makes him feel more comfortable when he's in areas that he's, you know, not necessarily, doesn't necessarily feel welcome. So that if something is to happen, he knows that he can go to that house and, like, ring the doorbell and be treated differently. And so that prompted my wife and I to get a Black Lives Matter sign.
Where is that hanging?
So the story goes a little further. So we put up the sign. It lasts maybe a week before it disappears. And then next door to my house, somebody puts up a blue ribbon around a tree, which apparently stands for, we stand with...
Blue Lives Matter.
Exactly. And then I start seeing signs on my block now some of the signs were saying, we back the badge. And this is just down the street where you're going to drop me off, and you're not going to see a sign in my front lawn. That's because I just ordered a new one that I plan to put out as soon as it gets in the mail. I have to order from this bookstore in St. Louis where I guess they produce the original sign, right?
Because Michael Brown happened in Ferguson.
Correct.
I wonder if that's the... Yeah.
That's probably the connection. Yeah. But it was really interesting, and it ended up... You know, my wife and I were going back and forth, like, is this something that we're going to take on in the neighborhood? Like, even on just, like, a micro level.
If you think about it, this micro level that he's talking about on his block really reflects the divisiveness in the national dialogue right now. Black Lives Matter pitted against Blue Lives Matter. One side trying to beat the other, not through a constructive debate, but by using dirty tactics. And his wife was the first one to notice that their sign had been taken down.
She comes home earlier than me because I typically work nights. And she's like, hey, do you know what happened to the sign? I was like, what sign? What are you talking about? Like, because I just assume that no, you're going to take a left right here. I just assume that nobody's going to touch it. It's on my lawn. Like, what, you know what I mean? What right does anybody else have to touch my stuff? And she was like, no, I think, like, the sticks are still there, but somebody picked it up.
And right now we're passing the blue ribbon around a tree.
That ribbon was put up by his next door neighbor to support the police. And it was one of two blue ribbons that I spotted that day on his street.
Like, obviously somebody has made a statement to us. Are we going to just let sleeping dogs lie? Are we going to put another sign out and see what happens? And we obviously came to the conclusion that we're going to put another sign out.
What's your prediction?
I mean, it may just get taken down again, but I think that it still makes sense based on what I was talking about with my coworkers, which is like, I, especially even more so now that there are other signs in the neighborhood that say the opposite of that. To know that there's a place that you can go if something bad happens and you want to be treated properly as a person of color or a minority.
I want to commend that last rider and his wife for sticking their necks out and refusing to be silenced, even if it means awkwardness with their neighbors on the block, because I think that's a lot more than most people are willing to do these days. And I also think there's a lot of awkward conversations that need to be had if we are ever going to make progress on any of these issues. Just trying to silence the other side, that's not the way to go about doing things. Regardless of your politics, the way to win a debate isn't by trying to silence your opponent. It's It's by having a stronger argument. And that is where I'm going to leave things this week. Couple of things before I sign off, though. First, quick update to last week's episode. Remember, lots of folks have been reaching out to me on Facebook this past week, wondering about the passenger from last week who was about to propose to his girlfriend right after he got out of the car. Well, I got some good news, everybody. He emailed me a couple days ago, and she said yes. Also, Lyft is not a sponsor of this show, has nothing to do with the content. But if you haven't signed up for Lyft yet and you want to help me out, please sign up for Lyft using my promo code. It's easy to remember. It's just Backseat Rider, all one word, the name of this podcast, Backseat Rider. And that is good for $50 in free ride credit for any new users of the Lyft app. Backseat Rider is edited by Bob Gilmartin. And also, thank you so much to WTTW and WTTW.com for their support of this podcast. Look for brand new episodes of Backseat Rider every Wednesday on PodcastOne.com, the all-new Podcast One app. And of course, be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts. And if you're liking Backseat Rider, please tell a friend about it. All right, I'll see everybody next Wednesday.